Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about BP, which is one of the world's largest integrated oil companies. We will review the company's annual report to get a better idea of its business model. We'll review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. We'll look at the company's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. And finally, do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in BP at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review BP.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 20F annual report that BP filed with the SEC. The first item that the company talks about is how it's transitioning from IOC to IEC, where it states that we have set our strategy to transform our integrated oil company to an integrated energy company focusing on delivering solutions for customers. BP states that this is a major necessary step in support of our purpose to reimagine energy for people and our planet, in our ambition to become a net zero company by 2050 or sooner and help the world get to net zero. The company points out that after more than a century defined by oil and gas through two core segments, upstream and downstream, it has changed its strategy to become a very different energy company in the next decade. And what this means is BP will significantly be scaling up its low carbon energy business. It will transform its customers' mobility and convenient offering. It will focus on oil, gas, and refining portfolio and drive down emissions as part of its net zero ambition. Next, BP talks about its strategic frame, financial frame, and investor proposition. BP plans on staying resilient and focused with its hydrocarbons. And any money and cash flow that's generated through its hydrocarbon business, it plans on investing that in its low-carbon electricity and energy, as well as its convenience and mobility initiatives. While following the strategic framework, BP will be integrating energy systems, partnering with countries, cities, and industries, as well as driving digital and innovation. Next, BP talks about its financial framework and how it plans on allocating capital. It states that its first priority will always be resilient dividend, followed by a strong balance sheet. After that is the investing at scale in the energy transition, followed by investing to maximize value in resilient hydrocarbons, and finally is the share buyback commitment. As we can see, BP is prioritizing the investing in the energy transition over its investments in its hydrocarbon entities. Next, BP talks about its investor proposition, where it claims that it plans on delivering long-term shareholder value by having committed distributions, profitable growth, and sustainable value. Now let's look at the company's reportable segments, which are outlined on page 180 of this report. Over here, the company provides a segmental analysis where BP states that as of December 31st, 2020, it had three reportable segments, upstream, downstream, and Rosneft. The upstream segment includes activities such as oil and gas exploration, field development and production, midstream transportation, storage and processing, and marketing and trading of natural gas, including liquefied natural gas, LNG, together with power and natural gas liquids. Next, its downstream segment includes activities such as refining, manufacturing, marketing, transportation, and supply and trading of crude oil, petroleum, petrochemicals, products, and related services to wholesale and retail customers. And finally, BP talks about its Rosneft segment. Rosneft is a Russian integrated oil company, and BP owns 19.75% of the voting shares of Rosneft, which is listed on the stock exchange in Moscow. With almost 20% voting rights, BP's management has a sway over how Rosneft conducts its business. So BP has to report Rosneft using the equity method of accounting and has to report Rosneft as a separate operating segment. Finally, other businesses and corporate comprises of biofuel and winded businesses, the company's shipping and treasury functions, and corporate activities worldwide. On the next page, BP continues its segmental analysis where it outlines the revenue breakdown across the operating segments. We can see that the downstream segment brought in about $163 billion out of the total $180 billion for the year 2020. This means that about 90% of the company's revenue came in from its downstream segment. On the next page, BP breaks down its revenue and non-current assets across geographic areas. We can see that in the year 2020, about 30.8% of the company's revenue came in from the United States. In other words, about $56 billion out of the total $180 billion in revenue in the year 2020 came from the United States. Similarly, when we look at non-current assets, which includes plant, property and equipment, goodwill, intangible assets, investments in joint ventures, investments in associates, and non-current prepayments, United States had about 32.8% of the company's total non-current assets. In other words, about $53 billion out of the $161 billion of the company's non-current assets are located in the United States. In short, a third of the company's revenue and non-current assets are located in the United States, and about two-thirds of them are located outside of the United States. Now that we have a brief understanding of BP's business strategy and its reportable segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at BP's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at BP. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. In 2011, BP brought in about $380 billion, and in the year 2020, it brought in about $180 billion. We can clearly see the cyclicality in the company's top line number, as the revenue has fluctuated from a high of about $380 billion to a low of about $183 billion to another high of about $300 billion to another low of about $180 billion. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, BP's operating income was about $35 billion, and for the year 2020, it was a negative number, which tells us that the company's operating income and cost of goods exceeded the company's revenue. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that the company also reported a negative operating income in 2015 as well as 2016. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, BP's net income was about $25.7 billion. In 2019, it was about $4 billion. And for the year 2020, the company reported a $20 billion loss. Ideally, we want the company's net income to be staying steady or increasing. However, the fluctuations in the company's net income is fairly common in an oil and gas company. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2011, BP paid out about $1.68 as dividend, and for the year 2020, it paid out about $1.86 as dividend. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that the company's dividends have been increasing from 2011 through 2019. We did see a drop-off in the company's dividend in the year 2020, primarily because of the pandemic, where the management was trying to conserve the cash that it had. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, BP had 3,189 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, it had 3,375 million shares outstanding. When we look at the past 10-year trend, ideally we want to see the company's shares outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. A decreasing shares outstanding number tells us that the company is buying back its shares, which actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. However, in the case of BP, the shares outstanding number have been going up and down. For example, from 2011 through 2015, the company appears to have been buying back its shares as the share count was decreasing. After 2015, all the way through 2019, the company appears to have been issuing more shares because the share count was increasing. After 2019, the company's shares outstanding number decreased, which tells us that the company bought back some of its shares. And finally, over the past 12 months, the company issued about 5 million more shares. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Ideally, we want to see the company's book value to be staying steady or increasing. Back in 2011, the company's book value was about $34.55 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about $22.52 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2011, BP's free cash flow was about $4.3 billion. In the year 2019, it was about $10.35 billion. It was negative in the year 2020, which tells us that the company's capital spending exceeded its operating cash flow. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. I will be using the past 10 years of my free cash flow for my expected rate of return calculation. I will be substituting the trailing 12-month figure of $5,769 million for my 2020 free cash flow number. And finally, for my discounted free cash flow, I will be using the $5,769 million. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was 6.77%. For the year 2019, it was 1.45%. And for the year 2020, it was a negative number because the company's income was negative. However, what this 2019 number means is every $100 that the company made in the year 2019, after it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $1.45 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations, so it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 32 times, for the year 2019, it was about 3.34 times, and for the year 2020, it was a negative number because the company's income was negative. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. A current ratio greater than 1 tells us that the company has enough oxygen in its system to survive for another 12 months because it has enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, BP's current ratio was at 1.16, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.29. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 0.69, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.86. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage number tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 2.63, and for the latest quarter, it's at 3.55. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has slowly been trending upwards. Finally, looking at the debt to equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt to equity ratio to be less than 1. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2011, the company's debt to equity was at 0.32, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.9. Similar to the past 10-year trend of the company's financial leverage, BP's debt to equity ratio has also been trending upwards. BP's financial leverage and debt to equity ratios are higher than its competitors such as Chevron, Exxon, and Shell. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. BP does not have a meaningful price-to-earnings ratio because its earnings were negative. S&P 500, on the other hand, has a price-to-earnings of 26.1. Next is the price-to-book ratio. BP has a price-to-book of 1.2, whereas S&P 500 has a price-to-book of 4.3. After that is price-to-sales. BP has a price-to-sales of 0.5, whereas S&P 500 has a price-to-sales of 3.1. Next is price-to-cash flow. BP has a price-to-cash flow ratio of 5.1. whereas S&P 500 has a price-to-cash flow of 17.2. And finally, the dividend yield. BP has a dividend yield of 4.8%, and S&P 500 has a dividend yield of 1.5%. So on all these valuation metrics, other than the price-to-earnings ratio, BP is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at BP's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted the company's trailing 12-month free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $5,769 million. I'm assuming an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 5%. What this means is I expect BP's free cash flow to grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm assuming BP's long-term growth rate to be 4%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect BP's free cash flow to grow at 4%. BP has 3,375 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $63,305 million. I got this number from the company's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value per share to be about $12.36. When we compare this intrinsic value to the current stock price of about $26 per share, we can see that the current stock price is trading about 2.1 times the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $45 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $105 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $12. Now, if you disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that BP is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be a negative number, which tells us that the company is not able to generate enough free cash flows and accumulate those cash flows to counter for the company's debt. Now, if you disregard BP's debt, in other words, if you think that BP is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point in even worrying about paying the company's debt back, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $31 per share. Finally, we know that the company's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 5%. And if we add a 3% margin of safety on top of that and make our discount rate 8%, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $28.5 per share. And if we compare this intrinsic value to BP's current stock price of $26.1 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 8% below the company's intrinsic value. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for BP. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the past 10 years. We can clearly see the cyclicality in the business, which is inherent with any oil and gas company. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 25% likelihood that BP's free cash flow will grow at 5%, a 40% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 1%, and a 35% likelihood that its free cash flow will decline at 10%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 3,375 million shares, at the current stock price of about $26.1 per share, you can expect to get an annual return of about 4.3% on this investment. What this means is if you were to purchase a share of BP at the current stock price of about $26.1 per share and hold this security through 2060, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 4.3% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We briefly went over BP's 20F annual filing and saw how the company is trying to transition from an integrated oil company to an integrated energy company by funding more of its renewable type projects. We saw that the company has three reportable segments and the revenue breakdown across those segments. We also noticed how 1/3 of the company's revenue comes from the United States, and 1/3 of the company's total non-current assets are located in the United States. Next, we saw how the company's revenue, operating income, and net income over the past 10 years have been fluctuating, which is fairly common for a company in the oil and gas sector as it goes through its boom and bust cycles. We noticed how BP's dividends were increasing and trending upwards all the way through 2019. BP had to cut its dividend in the year 2020 as it was trying to conserve its cash. BP's shares outstanding number have been going up and down over the past 10 years, which tells us that when the management cannot find any good place to allocate its capital, it ends up buying back its shares. And when it does need more capital and cannot find it, it does equity financing, which is why we see the shares outstanding number going up. Next, we looked at the company's financial health and liquidity ratios and saw how the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. The company's financial leverage and debt to equity ratio was higher than its competitors, Chevron, Exxon, and Shell. Next, we saw how on majority of BP's current valuation metrics, BP was undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. After that, we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis and found that when we use a 10% discount rate, the intrinsic value came to about $12 per share. However, when we used an 8% discount rate, the intrinsic value came to about $28.5 per share, which would indicate that the current stock price is trading about 8% below the company's intrinsic value. Next, we performed the expected rate of return calculation and saw that if we were to purchase a share of BP at the current stock price of about $26.1 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 4.3% on this investment. Overall, BP is trying really hard to get out of the traditional oil and gas business by prioritizing investments in the renewable sector over its traditional oil and gas investments. The profitability in those renewable investments is about 1/3 of what the traditional oil and gas investments produce, so we're likely to see BP's profitability and net income go down. At the same time, out of all the big oil and gas companies, BP appears to have made the biggest shift in its strategy by going after these sustainable carbon zero projects. In conclusion, if you want to invest in a company that is trying to move away from its traditional oil and gas business model to more of a sustainable, renewable carbon zero type business model, then BP is your best bet. However, if you're just focused on the financials of BP, then there are other investment opportunities in the oil and gas sector that have better fundamentals, are undervalued, and provide a greater margin of safety than BP. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on BP interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.